Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart-Centered Loving. I'm your host, Jim Brown. You're safe. No harm will come to you in this space. And my goal every week, as always, is to bring more love, happiness, joy, compassion, peace, and abundance into your life. And every week I ask you to listen to the show with one goal. Look for one thing you can take out of this show and implement it into your daily life. As always, I'm going to ask you at the end of today's show what that was. Today our program is on how thoughts create our beliefs and how our beliefs are a major factor on how we perceive our life and therefore create our reality. The opening quote, "To be beautiful means to be yourself. You don't need to be accepted by others. You need to accept yourself." And that's by Thich Nhat Hanh. I know I'm pronouncing that right. Anyway, let's start with the opening joke. And this is the job at the FBI. The FBI had an opening for an assassin. After all the background checks, the interviews, and testing were done, there were three finalists. Two were men and one was a woman. For the final test, the FBI agents took one of the men to a large metal door and handed him a gun. "We must know that you will follow instructions no matter what the circumstances. Inside the room, you will find your wife sitting in a chair. Kill her." The man said, "You can't be serious. I could never shoot my wife." The agent said, "Then you're not the right man for this job. Take your wife and go home." The second man was given the same instructions. He took the gun and went into the room. All was quiet for about 5 minutes. Then he came out with tears in his eyes. "I tried, but I can't kill my wife." The agent said, "You don't have what it takes. Take your wife and go home." Finally, it was the woman's turn. She was given the same instructions to kill her husband. She took the gun and went into the room. Shots were heard, screaming was heard, crashing, banging on the walls, and then after a few minutes, all was quiet. The door opened slowly, and there stood the woman wiping the sweat from her brow. She said, "The gun was loaded with blanks, so I had to beat him to death with the chair." And the moral of the story is women are crazy. Don't mess with them. Today we're going to talk, like I said, about how thoughts create. What I'd like to start out with is a discussion between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. The conscious mind, as we all know, is what we're aware of, the part of us that we hear ourselves thinking, processing the words that I'm saying, giving those words meaning, having other thoughts that go through your mind about, well, when I finish listening to this, what do I have to do? Or if you're in your car, you're paying attention to this and that. Yeah, that's the conscious mind. The subconscious mind, among other things, takes care of our automatic functions, like the blood flowing, the heart beating, our breathing. You know, we don't have to think about any of that. And the subconscious mind also is what all of us want. It's our absolute slave. It will do whatever we tell it to do. Now, there's a few conditions here. Number one, it has no sense of humor. So if you say, "I'm a klutz," it say, "Okay, I got to prove you right that you're a klutz." Boom. If you say, "Man, everything happens is we can live from paycheck to paycheck. As soon as we get a few bucks, something happens." Boom. Subconscious mind says, okay, I got to prove you're right. Got to make sure you live from paycheck to paycheck. You say, oh, man, I get a cold every year at blah, blah. Subconscious mind says, okay, that's what we got to do. It's that time of the year. It's time for your cold. Boom. We'll make sure you're right. You're always right. Put in another way, as many of you know, I speak on cruise ships. And the conscious mind would be like the captain of the ship. And the captain would be giving directions to the person who is actually steering the ship. And think of it as the captain is up where he can see or she can see everything that's going on. And the person who's actually setting the course for the ship is down where he or she can't see out of the ship. So you, as the conscious mind, can give instructions to the subconscious mind and set the ship in a direction and a speed so that it'll run right into a cliff, into a mountain. And the subconscious mind will do it. It has no sense of direction. So what happens here is that we've got all these thoughts every day, and these thoughts, for the most part, are thoughts that are not empowering thoughts, because we get inundated with advertisements, with bad news, all these kinds of things happen, and then we give meaning to them, and then they're in there, and they're being processed to our subconscious mind. Oh, I'll never finish school. I'll never pay off this debt. We can go on and on and on with those thoughts. So that was just a brief explanation of the relationship between your conscious mind and your subconscious mind. And it's also an alert to you to be paying more attention to what your conscious mind is thinking, and paying more attention to all these thoughts that are going through your mind, because they basically are instructions to the subconscious mind of what it is you want it to do. Like I said in the beginning, it has absolutely no sense of humor. So it'll do whatever you tell it to do. You don't even realize that you're telling your subconscious mind what to do, thereby creating your entire life. So that's the key here, is to recognize that you have to be always consciously aware of the thoughts that are going through your mind. And as they go through, you say, whoa, let's get rid of this one. I don't want this one. I don't want to create this by continuing to think this and continuing to implant that into my subconscious mind. So, hope you get that. Now, let's talk about energy for a minute, and then we'll go back into thoughts. Everything is energy, okay? Everything. And energy moves at different speeds. Obviously, lighter energy moves faster. Last week when we talked about power versus being a victim, we talked about kinesiology and how you can take your thumb and your forefinger, put them together, loop them inside each other, and ask yourself a question. And if it's empowering or if the answer is yes, you're going to be having a hard time getting your fingers, pulling your fingers apart. If it's something that makes you upset or something like that, and you try and pull them apart, boom, they come apart real easy. So the energy is always there, and we need to be connecting the relationship between our thoughts and the energy we create. Because positive thoughts are going to create a lighter energy, they're going to create a lighter feeling, they're going to feel different physiologically in our body than negative thoughts are. So we have to be careful when we're dealing with energy, because a lot of energy comes through our emotions. And our emotions can trigger things so fast, we don't even realize that they're triggered, or that, you know, it's like a vacuum cleaner that you get sucked into an argument, for example, so fast you don't realize you're in it, and you're just going back and forth because now you have to be in this argument. You have to be part of this argument. And now once you're in there, you're thinking, how am I going to get out of there? Or you're not thinking at all. You're just engaged in the exchange. So energy is going to attract what kind of energy? It's going to attract the kind of energy that is given out. So if somebody is angry at you and they start picking on you or intimidating you or whatever it is they start to do, then that energy is what's going to be given out, and our natural reaction and again, the word here is reaction, is to react with that kind of energy. And that's not what we want to do. So we want to be able to, ahead of time, ahead of time, think about how we want to respond rather than react. React is a knee-jerk reaction. Respond is the way you would want to if you had complete control over how you're going to respond to a situation. And we all have somebody, or more than somebody, in our life that are our master electricians who have our buttons wired. So we want to watch that and pay attention to it. Again, we'll go back to the phrase that we got to develop our conscious awareness as it relates to our thoughts, as it relates to our energy, as it relates to our emotion, as it relates to how we move through every moment of our life. The more consciously you're aware of what's going on, the better you're able to respond rather than to react. Now, another example of energy attracting like energy would be a radio. Those of you who may remember when we had radios and they had a dial, and you would go from one station to another and you'd hear this, and then it would zero in on a particular wavelength. Well, whatever kind of radio show was on that wavelength was the only thing that could come in on that wavelength, just like this show. This is the only show. You found this show as blogtalkradio.com /Jim Brown Speaker. Whether you got my email and you just clicked on the link, or whether you went online, however you did it, this is the only show that you get with that identification, with that link. So it's the same thing with radio waves. The last one we talked about last week, in terms of an example, was a magnet. Okay, a magnet is going to attract iron to it, and we're going to attract to us whatever we put out. So again, we want to be totally consciously aware of the energy that we're putting out. And we're going to put out energy that we only want to attract back to us. So if you want more love in your life, you got to be more loving. There was a movie years ago that a little girl, I'm going to say maybe 10 to 12 years old, said, if you want a friend, be a friend. And that's how we get stuff going. The other thing I wanted to talk about just briefly in terms of energy is that when there's something negative or stressful going on in your life, you're going to feel it in your body. And it's important that you're able to identify where in your body it is. Because this is your body telling you, hey, this is stressful. And if you're not paying attention, you're going to miss it. And remember, our body is our best friend. Without our body, we go nowhere. When we push our body too far, 2 weeks ago we did the show on how to minimize holiday stress, and we talked all about that. When we push it too far, the body says, whoa, that's it. I'm not going this far. You can't do this. In reality, the body is dictating what's going on. And when we get in conflict with our body, we have all kinds of problems, don't we? And in our healthcare system in the United States, we just deal with the effect of what goes on. And the effect manifests itself as a sickness or a disease. And our whole goal in Western medicine is simply to eradicate the effect. And I don't have any problem with that. What I do have a problem with is that then once we've dealt with those effects, we don't recognize the cause and look for the cause and look for the relationship between the cause and the effect. I may have mentioned before that when I do my program in front of live audiences on stress, I ask people what causes stress, and invariably somebody will say time. And when they say that, I'll ask if anybody in the audience has ever received a terminal diagnosis. And for the most part, somebody will have. And I'll ask them what impact it's had on their life. And they will say, more than any other response, It was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I know the answer to the next question, but I want the audience to hear it from that person. And I'll say, how is that so? And they'll simply say, it taught me what was important in life. So we need to be able to separate the difference between what's important and what's urgent. And so often in our life, what is urgent is what runs our life, and we never get time for what's important. So we're talking about the relationship between our health, between our body, and what it is that our thoughts are causing these sicknesses and diseases in our life and how we can change those. So let's get into the thoughts. Before I do that, just want to mention that I got an email, Helga, in England. I got a nice long email from her. Probably met her 10, 12 years ago speaking on a cruise ship. So I know for sure that Helga's listening to the radio show in England, and they are pet lovers, Helga and Ellen. Hello, and hopefully we'll see you in Stonehenge next May. Okay, thoughts. It's widely held that we think approximately 60,000 thoughts every day. The problem is nearly all of these thoughts are the same thoughts you had yesterday. And for many people, these thoughts are about how your life is going. And most of the time, people's life isn't going the way we want it to go. So you're the only one that has any control of your thoughts. The thoughts come in, but that doesn't mean you can allow them in. They come and they go. Just try and meditate, and you see how fast thoughts are coming through your mind. And in meditation, our only goal is to not have thoughts and just let things be. Or if we do have thoughts, it's just to let them go by. Just observe them, watch them passing by, just like you're sitting and you're looking outside and you watch a cloud pass by or a bird fly by. Don't give any meaning to it, just watch them go. So remember, you're the only one that has any control over your thoughts. I don't have any control at all over your thoughts. Neither do your parents, your spouse, your children, your boss, none of them do. You're the only one that can decide which thoughts you're going to give meaning to, and which thoughts you're going to keep, and which thoughts you're going to get rid of. So you, and only you, are in charge of your life. When we talked about power versus victim last week, that's what we're talking about. You have the power to keep in your life, to live the life that you were born to live. You have everything you need. All you need to do is to know that it's your life, and you have control of it, and you don't want to give up your power and be a victim to anybody. We talked about the program on fear, and we've talked before about how the world is run by fear, and if those who are trying to control our life get us to believe through fear that we're victims and that we're weak, we can easily be controlled and manipulated. And when we're being controlled and we're being manipulated, what's happening? We're giving away our power, aren't we? Very simply, I'm a victim. I can't do this. I don't have the education. I'm too old. I'm too heavy. I'm a woman. I'm a black person. I'm a this or that or the other thing. And we give our power away. Nonsense. I can give you hundreds and thousands of examples of people who are just like you, who have been whatever one would call as successful. Now, the Bible suggests that we have to become the gatekeeper to our mind, and I agree with that. So this means we have to be vigilant about it. We've talked about it. And negative thoughts, they grow like weeds, and we all have had gardens or seen weeds grow, and weeds grow unbelievably fast. Negative thoughts are like a wildfire spreading. So we're constantly being bombarded by advertisements, whether it's on the computer, which drives me nuts. Can't do anything. I have a Mac, and they're trying to do another update, and the thing keeps popping in every 10 minutes to, I want you to do an update. You know, or whether it's advertisements when you're on a site. downloaded a Scrabble game, and I enjoy playing Scrabble. There was one that was called Words with People or something like that. I could play it by myself. It was kind of like Scrabble. And then I took the upgrade, and the upgrade made me go to the Internet in order to play. So I just like to be able to do that, and every time I do a word on Scrabble, I end up getting a commercial. So I know how we're bombarded with advertisements on television, the newspaper, the computer, the radio, magazines, everywhere we go. And we have to decide which ones we let in and which ones we don't. So if we don't stop our negative thoughts, they're going to take over our entire life. Now, the reason that we have to become aware of our thoughts is because what we consistently think as thoughts, not what happens once or twice or 10 times, but the thoughts that we have consistently over a period of time, like any habit, whether it's working out at the gym, whether it's going on a diet, whether it's doing a training program for a marathon, for a race, for whatever, you develop that discipline. And that discipline has a consequence, has a result. And it's the same thing here. If we don't have the discipline and we continue to think these negative, self-deprecating thoughts on an ongoing basis, these thoughts become our beliefs. Boom. Now, every one of you who's listening to this show is coming to conclusions about what's being said. And each one of you is coming to a different conclusion. At the end of many of my programs on stage, I'll ask people, what was the most important thing you got out of today? Just like I asked you. But here are the differences. I don't have you in front of me to hear what your response is. Which reminds me, let's check the chat room. Nobody's in the chat room. Come to my chat room. Okay. And so it's amazing what people will do, and they'll say, hey, this was the most important thing. That was the most important thing. And there'll be things that I didn't say, and that was the most important thing that happened to them. So what happens is we process what we hear through our filters. And our filters basically are our beliefs, our values, our life experiences, and the emotion or the feeling at the time that this is happening. Those four factors pretty much determine how we're going to translate what we see or hear into how we give it meaning. Because for the most part, we give meaning to most everything that happens to us. And we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. So that's why it's important that we maintain control over what we think. And if we have a thought that isn't serving us in a positive way, we have to get rid of it. We just say, that's it, you're not allowed in here, I'm taken care of, I'm abundant, I am well, whatever it is that you're saying. And when you develop your affirmations, always say it in the positive and in the present tense. I am wealthy. I am healthy. I am wise. I am filled with abundance. My life is filled with abundance. If you keep saying, I'm going to, your subconscious mind just says, okay, you're going to. That going to has no meaning because it's not here. If you say, I am, and you declare it with emotion, and you keep it in the present tense, and you continue to say it, your subconscious mind is going to carry it out for you. See, there's that silly little pop-up thing. See? I'm just like you. Get out of here. Okay. These thoughts are our beliefs, and the beliefs, our values, our life experiences, and our emotions are what we process, the filters that we process everything in our life on, through. And that's, we give the meaning, and that dictates how we're going to perceive every experience in our life. And what happens is we have the experience, and we develop a perception based upon our values, our beliefs, our life experiences, and our emotions, we develop a perception of what that means. That perception, which we develop, which we have control over, is what creates our reality. In my opinion, there is no such thing as what society calls reality. There is my reality. There's not a reality, there's my reality. And when it's my reality, I can always change it because my reality was created by me based upon my perception of what that meant. Now, my wife, I witnessed to a hit-and-run automobile accident yesterday. Okay. She obviously has a different perception than the woman whose car got hit, who has a different perception than the woman who hit her and was the hit-and-run. So all three of them, same exact. They all saw or experienced the same thing, but they all have different perceptions. Everything we perceive is based on these perceptions, and that the meaning we give to it creates our reality. Now, thoughts are flying through our head at lightning speeds, and many of them pass right through. And when a thought stays, and it's a negative one, here's what we have to remember. I'm thinking in all the programs I've done, probably the biggest word that will create freedom for you, no matter what's going on in your life, is the word choose. You get to choose. No matter what's happening in your life, you have an infinite number of choices. You always get to choose. So if you can remember one thing or one word, that would be choose. I am always at choice. I don't care what the situation is. There is always another choice. If the choice you have isn't serving you, then look for another choice. Don't let this negative energy sit in your brain and in your life rent-free. Kick it out. It's like having a boarder who's not paying their rent. You're going to kick him or her out. Every week, when I start the show, what do I start with? I say, you're safe. And my goal every week is to bring more love, happiness, joy, compassion, peace, and abundance into your life. So what are we talking about? We're talking about thoughts. So you have a thought. The thought is a negative thought. Ask yourself the question, is this thought bringing me peace? Is this thought bringing me love? Pick the word you want. It doesn't have to be one of the words that I say here, which are, you know, love, happiness, joy, compassion, peace, and abundance. Pick your own. Is this thought bringing me boom? What is it you want in your life? What is your life about? For me, what I'm focusing on is inner peace. And we all, not we all, but because I'm a Chicago Bear fan, I found out that they delayed the game on Sunday because there were storms and tornadoes. And that comes through at an incredible speed. Well, a hurricane has an eye to it. And in the eye of the hurricane is where there is complete calm and peace. And what I'm looking for in my life is to learn how to live in the eye of the hurricane, to live in that place of inner peace, of calm, of quiet, of letting it all go. And knowing that when I'm beginning to feel the wind, the breeze, that I'm moving away from my center, my purpose, my commitment to learning to learn how to live in inner peace. What is it for you? What's the thought? What is it that you want in your life? So if you've got a thought, and we'll use the word inner peace, that's fine, because it's my show. I can say what I want. Then you got to say, well, what do I have to think in order for me to come back into a place of inner peace? We always want to find another way of looking at something, because there is never, ever, ever only one way to look at anything. As I mentioned before, last week we talked about power versus victim. And if I don't believe that thoughts create my life, then I'm going to believe, or you're going to believe, that you're a victim. And that only external factors, which are beyond your control, influence and create your reality. And if we're going to claim our power, we've got to accept that we create everything in our life. And you can say, well, you know, I wouldn't sabotage myself that way. Nonsense. Every single one of us who's being honest with ourselves knows how often we sabotage our life. So let's forget for now and forever the concept that we don't sabotage ourselves. We have been unconscious creators, and what we're talking about here is moving from an unconscious creator who has a life that you don't want into being a conscious creator and learning how to create what it is that you want for yourself. And that begins with the thoughts that you have. That's always at your choice. That is your power. You and only you have the power to think the thoughts you think and to keep the thoughts you want to keep and to reject and evict the thoughts that you don't want to have. The problem we have when we're having our thoughts is that what we're doing is we're thinking about these, whatever it is, we're thinking about it constantly, and usually what we're thinking about is what we have, right? And if we're talking about making a move from unconscious creators into conscious creators, what we have isn't what we want, is it? We look at our life and say, well, I don't have this and this and this and this and this. Well, pardon me. We don't have it. We're stuck here, aren't we? And we keep thinking about what it is we have, which is what we don't want. And remember, we said that our subconscious mind job is to give us what it tells us. And if we keep telling the subconscious mind, you know, I'm always sick. I don't have enough money. I never get caught up on the bills. This happens, that happens. And it just keeps saying, okay, we're going to make sure that you're right. So we're sitting here right now and we're saying, hey, what I have isn't what I want. Therefore, I have to stop thinking about what I have. I have to shift and look and say, hey, I have to focus on what I want, not on what I have. Okay? And that's a big shift, isn't it? We want to look and focus on what you want. Where do you want to go? Not where are you. Focus on where you want to go. I think I may have mentioned in the past that when I went to Tony Robbins seminars in the 80s, he said when he was learning how to drive a race car, they taught him that when the car goes into a spin, you look where you want the car to go, not where it's going, where you want it to go. And that's the whole key. You look where you want your life to go. Now, many of you may be familiar with Esther Hicks, Esther and Jerry Hicks. Jerry passed away, I don't know, a year or 2 years ago. And they've got many books. She does seminars all over the world. And she channels an entity called Abraham. And one of the things that they talk about is how basically what we are is we're in the river of life. And we're rowing our boat upstream. And up the stream is everything we don't want. And somebody comes by in their boat and says, why are you rowing upstream where everything you don't want is up the stream and everything you do want is down the stream? You go, well, and what do people respond? Well, I'm rowing upstream because everybody else is. Everybody else's life is difficult. Everybody else has trouble. Everybody else has problems. So I got to be part of everybody else because I got to be normal. I got to be part of people. What do you have to do in order to shift your life from rowing upstream to get to everything you don't want to getting to those things that you want? Simple, isn't it? All you got to do is drop the oars in the water and let life take you where it will. And understand and know that everything that happens in your life is happening for your highest and your greatest good. You get to choose. All these things are there so that we can learn. We came here on earth to become students of life. And every single experience we have is there to teach us a lesson. And when we can learn the lesson, then we get to go on to the next lesson. And if we don't learn it, it's going to come back again. Just like the multiplication tables. When I was in school, first table we learned was a 2x table. 2 × 1 = 2, 2 × 2 = 4. And we didn't get to go to the 3x table until we learned the 2x table. So it's the same thing in life. Problems are going to be presented to you, and if you accept that your role in life is to learn how to solve these problems, then it'll be easy to solve the problems. You always got to find another way of looking at it. Okay? So check out Esther Hicks. Check out her books. Check out Tony Robbins and the things that he says and his books, and see what goes on. Next thing I want to talk about is to choose. There's that word again. Choose to practice being an observer, not a critic or a judge. Okay? I don't know about you, but I get in the car, and I'm getting closer to observing and not judging or not being as harsh or passionate in my judging about how people drive and how people dress and what this one is saying or this one is doing or how this one is exercising. You know, going to the gym isn't my idea of great fun every day. So you watch what people are doing, and you know, you become the judge or the critic. Like, oh, please, let it go. Just be there, observe it. People are fun. People are fun to watch. And you just say there's an infinite variety of ways to look at and see and experience everything. No way is right or wrong. Now, a quote you know from the past that I enjoy, A Course in Miracles, and one of the quotes that I like is this. When any situation arises which tempts you to become disturbed, say, there is another way of looking at this. Remember that. All you got to do whenever you get upset is say, there's another way to look at this. Now, your responsibility is to find that other way and not stop looking until you find it. That's your job. You're going to get in this stuff. We're all going to get in this stuff virtually all day, every day. The thing is not that we get in it or not, it's how quickly we know we're in it and what we have to do to get out of it. And what is your focus? What is your life goal? And we're going to talk about that next, and that's our mission statement for life. So your job is to search for another way of looking at this until you find it. And remember, if we don't, what are we doing? Again, we found another way to give up our power and say, hey, I'm a victim. So here's a suggestion. Develop a mission statement for your life. So for example, my life is about finding and or creating the good, the joy, the happiness, the love in myself and in every person and in every situation in my life. And I'm always looking for the humor in every situation. What's your mission statement? What's your life purpose? Develop it. Make it short. Make it simple. Boom. And I love using trinities as an easy way of remembering things. And to me, a trinity is a triangle. I'm not getting into anything religious here. I'm just talking about three things. And Georgina this morning substituted in yoga because Barbara had no reconstruction surgery yesterday. So what Georgina was talking about was negative thoughts. And what I came up with is, what if we had this triangle? Three words. On top is choose. On the left side or right side, I don't care, however you want to put it, the word love. And then the third one is forgiveness. So what if you looked at your life and you built a triangle and you say, what's my life about? My life is about choosing. What's the first and most important thing I want to choose? To love myself. You'd be amazed at how many people I've asked to do this exercise and they can't do it. Stand in front of the mirror, stark naked. Look through your eyes into your heart and your soul and say, I love you. You're beautiful. And say that until you can believe it. Now, this is going to be much harder for the ladies because they're not going to look into their eyes. They're going to look at the body parts that they don't approve of. And they're going to be very judgmental and very critical of them. Not the point. The point is getting beyond the belief that who you are is the body into the belief that who you are is your soul. It's your heart. That's who you are. And regardless of the brainwashing that's happened to you in your life, your responsibility is to be able to once again recognize that I can always choose. And the first thing I choose is to love myself. And in order to do that, the first thing I'm going to have to do is to forgive myself. So I recognize that I'm always a choice. And now, today, for the first time or for the millionth time, I choose to love myself. And I choose to forgive myself for everything I've ever said or done. And when I can recognize that I can choose and love and forgive, then I know that I can accept myself just the way I am. With all my warts and all my faults, I can accept myself just the way I am. So then, once I'm able to do that, to be able to recognize that I can always choose, that I can forgive myself, and that I can love myself. And as a result of those three things, I accept myself just the way I am. So we just converted our triangle into a square, didn't we? Then the logical extension of that is once I can love myself, and once I can forgive myself, and once I can accept myself, I can accept other people, can't I? I can love other people just the way they are. I can forgive them for what they said or what they did that caused pain in my life. Remember, it's your life. We're here to help you claim your inheritance as one who's entitled to love, abundance, joy, happiness, peace. You're entitled to that. Now, when are you ready to believe that you're ready and you're going to deserve it and you're going to claim it? You don't have to do anything. It's there for you to claim. Do you get this? Let this in. This is huge. You are always a choice. Love yourself. Please love yourself. And if you have to go somewhere quiet and close your eyes and go inside and hold that little baby you who was never loved enough. Love that baby. Kiss that baby. Hug that baby. Tell that baby that that baby is safe and you'll take care of that baby for the rest of your life. Watch that baby grow up. Always know and let people know that you are lovable. You let yourself know how lovable you are. You go in there and you have to nurture and love that little boy, that little girl that was never nurtured and loved enough because your mother, your father, whoever raised you, didn't know how to love themselves, and therefore they didn't know how to teach you how to love yourself. Rather than play the role of the victim, you're claiming your power, and you're going to learn how to love yourself just the way you are. You're going to let go of of the past. You're going to let go of the negativity. You're going to let go of the pain, of the anger, of the hurt. You're going to let that all go. Because now you're ready to claim your power, to claim your inheritance, to love yourself, to nurture yourself, to accept yourself, and to forgive yourself. Once you've refined your life mission statement, it's going to enable you to see everybody through the light or the lens or the filter that you choose, rather than reacting to situations and allowing these powerful negative thoughts and energy to suck us in. When we react, and we all will, catch yourself as soon as you can and ask yourself, how do I want to respond? What's a better way of seeing this? I have a friend, and she knows who she is, and I'm not going to mention her name. She got a call from her brother-in-law about complaining about my friend's sister. Now, her brother-in-law and her sister are going through a separation and a divorce, and complaining about how her sister is handling it or not handling it, whatever it's called. And rather than react, my friend who has said that I've taught her a lot, she said to her brother-in-law, your marriage is your responsibility. I love you, and I wish the best for you. And then she said goodbye. You see that? You see how she took care of herself? She didn't get sucked into that negativity, into that anger, into that guilt that he was trying to lay on her, like blaming her, or say, you know, you got to fix your sister. You got to tell your sister this, that, or the other thing. No. Awesome, awesome, awesome example. In my opinion, we should all be on a debate team. Should have been on a debate team so that we learn how to see both sides of any argument or any situation. And I ask you to commit to seeing everything from another person's point of view. That doesn't in any way, shape, or form mean that you have to agree with their position. All you want to do is just see it. There's a saying about that. It says, a mind is like a parachute. It works best when it's open. So isn't it our responsibility to always keep our mind open and choose. I wonder what you'll get out of today's program. Will it be choose? Ask yourself, what would be a more loving thought than the one I'm thinking? So here's some possibilities. I can do this. I can learn this. I can accomplish this. I can overcome this. This too shall pass. I can become this. I am grateful for this opportunity. What did I create this event to teach me? What do I have to think in order for this situation to be fun? Remember, life's a game. Okay? We're here to play a game. I'll find a higher meaning to this. You know, the first meaning we find is usually a surface meaning. There's either a higher and or a deeper meaning to it. Look for the higher meaning to it. Look for the deeper meaning to it. And if you're in a situation that you can't leave, you can always choose a more pleasant thing to think about. Once again, we've talked about A Course in Miracles. They have 365 daily lessons. And my favorite ones are lesson number 1 and 2. Lesson number 1 is nothing I see in this room or on the street or from this window or in this place means anything. And they have you go through that on that first day and say, you know, this pencil doesn't mean anything. This microphone doesn't mean anything. This computer doesn't mean anything. This candle doesn't mean anything. This pen doesn't mean anything. I'm just looking around my office here. These paintings don't mean anything, etc., etc. Second lesson is, I have given everything I see on the street, from the window, in this room, all the meaning it has for me. I've given the computer the meaning it has for me. I've given the picture of my wife and myself the meaning it has for me. I've given the clock. I've given the candle here the meaning it has for me. Okay? So remember, we give it the meaning. Nothing has the meaning, and you could take anything and ask the next 10 people you see, what does this mean to you? And I guarantee you, you're going to have 10 different meanings. Now, if you're interested in these daily listens, Google A Course, did I say listens? Lessons. Google A Course in Miracles Daily Lessons. And you get to read them or listen to them for free. There's one lesson here that I'd like to share part of it with you. And I'm going to ask or invite you, if you're not driving or if you're in a place where you can safely close your eyes and listen. These thoughts do not mean anything. They are like the things I see in this room or on this street or from this window or in this place. This lesson is very powerful in helping me recognize the thoughts that are coming from the split mind for what they are, meaningless. This lesson brings me to the awareness that all the thoughts I think with the ego mind are trying to be substitutes for my real thoughts, love. As I learn to practice looking at my thoughts and recognize that they are really meaningless, a tiny opening is made, a crack in the hardened beliefs of separation. Even though it may seem uncomfortable to me to learn that what I've been cherishing is really meaningless, I am learning here, with this lesson, that seeing these thoughts as meaningless helps me to let them go. This is a very important step, learning to recognize what is meaningless. This recognition is the release from fear. It is only meaningless thoughts that frighten me, simply because we do not recognize that they are meaningless. Any thought that is not an extension of love is meaningless. Some of my thoughts scare me. Some of my thoughts make me feel guilty. Even happy thoughts come with a price tag. If circumstances are making me happy, then changing circumstances can bring a different emotion. I give all these thoughts a lot of weight, allowing them to control my emotions and mold my day and complicate my life until I don't know what is what and I wind up feeling trapped with no way out. When I read that my thoughts are meaningless, my first thought was that I have just learned that my mind is powerful. How can I dismiss thoughts as meaningless? Then I realized that meaningless thoughts are not without power, they are just without meaning. By acknowledging this, I can feel free to let them go and release them, and it doesn't rob me of my power. My most important task is to be mindful of my thoughts, to see them as they are not as I want them to be aware of their foundation in fear, neediness, and fantasy. I have placed so much importance in thoughts, I have treated them with a deference and respect, almost like little gods. At times, my thoughts run amok with shrieking and demanding voices that exhaust me with their relentless energy. They keep me awake. They keep me anxious. They take on a life of their own. I am aware that I have allowed this to become my reality. I am willing to see thoughts as meaningless, and in clinging to the meaningless, I miss the meaningful. I miss the joy of my true self, the self whose thoughts would make all the difference because those thoughts spring only from love. These true self thoughts come to me as I await the silence of the stilled ego mind. I wish to still the ego mind because I become aware that ego thoughts are meaningless. I realize that I can only be at peace in the meaningful. Now, I have to grab something from here because I need the closing story. And when I redid this just before we started, anyway, you don't care. The closing quote, you can explore the universe looking for someone who is more deserving of your love and affection than you are yourself. And you will never, ever find that person anywhere. This is from Buddha. So the closing story. I'm a former elementary school music teacher. I've always supplemented my income by teaching piano lessons, something I've done for over 30 years. During those years, I have found that children have many levels of musical ability, and even though I have never had the pleasure of having a prodigy, I have taught some very talented students. However, I have also had my share of what I call musically challenged pupils, one such being Robbie. Robbie was 11 years old when his mother, a single mom, dropped him off for his first piano lesson. I prefer that students, especially boys, begin at an earlier age, which I explained to Robbie. But Robbie said that it's always been his mother's dream to hear him play the piano. So I took him as a student. Well, Robbie began his piano lessons, and from the beginning I thought he was a hopeless endeavor. As much as Robbie tried, he lacked the sense of tone and basic rhythm needed to excel. But he dutifully reviewed his scales and some elementary piano pieces that I required of all my students. Over the months, he tried and tried while I listened and cringed and tried to encourage him. At the end of each weekly lesson, he would always say, "My mom's going to hear me play someday." But to me, it seemed hopeless. He just did not have any inborn ability. I only knew his mother from a distance as she dropped him off or waited in her old car to pick him up. She always waved and smiled but never dropped in. Then one day Robbie stopped coming for his lessons. I thought about calling him but assumed that because of his lack of ability he had decided to pursue something else. I was also glad that he stopped coming because he was a bad advertisement for my teaching. Several weeks later, I mailed a flyer recital to the students' homes. To my surprise, Robbie, who had received one of my flyers, asked me if he could come and be in the recital. I told him that the recital was for current pupils, and because he had dropped out, he really did not qualify. He told me that his mother had been sick and unable to take him to his piano lessons, but he's been practicing. "Please, Miss Honor, I've got to play," he said. I don't know what led me to allow him to play in the recital. Perhaps it was his insistence, or maybe something inside of me saying that it would be all right. The night of the recital came, and the high school gymnasium was packed with parents, relatives, and friends. I put Robbie last in the program just before I was to come up and thank all the students and play a finishing piece. I thought any damage he might be able to do can't come at the end of the program, and I could always salvage his poor performance through my curtain closer. Well, the recital went off without a hitch. The students had been practicing, and it showed. Then Robbie showed up on stage. His clothes were wrinkled. His hair looked like he had run an egg beater through it. Why wasn't he dressed up like the other students, I thought? Why didn't his mother at least make him comb his hair for this special night? Robbie pulled out the piano bench, and I was surprised when he announced that he had chosen to play Mozart's Concerto No. 21 in C major. I was not prepared for what I heard next. His fingers were light on the keys. They had even danced nimbly on the ivories. He went from pianoissimo to fortissimo, from allegro to virtuoso. His suspended chords that Mozart demands were magnificent. Never have I heard Mozart played so well by anyone his age. After 6.5 minutes, he ended in a grand crescendo, and everyone was on their feet in a wild applause. Overcome and in tears, I ran up on stage and I put my arms around Robbie in joy. "I have never heard you play like that, Robbie. How did you do it?" Through the microphone, Robbie explained, "Well, Miss Honor, remember I told you that my mom was sick? Well, actually, she had cancer, and she passed away this morning. And, well, she was born deaf. So tonight was the first time she ever heard me play, and I wanted to make it special." There wasn't a dry eye in the house that evening. As the people from social services led Robbie from the stage to be placed into foster care, I noticed that their eyes were red and puffy too. I thought to myself, how much richer my life had been for taking Robbie as my pupil. No, I've never had a prodigy, but that night I became a prodigy of Robbie. He was the teacher and I was the pupil. For he had taught me the meaning of perseverance and love and believing in yourself. And then maybe even taking a chance on someone and you didn't know why. Robbie was killed years later in a senseless bombing of the Alfred P. Murray Federal Building in Oklahoma City in April 1995. So many seemingly trivial interactions between two people present us with a choice. Do we act with compassion, or do we pass up that opportunity and leave the world a bit colder in the process? It's always your choice, isn't it? Join me next Tuesday at 2 o'clock Pacific time, and next Tuesday's show is going to be on forgiveness. Please remember to love yourself. I send love from my heart to your heart. Please receive this love. Share it with everybody you know. There is an infinite supply of love available, and we all need more love. Thank you. I love you. Bye-bye.